Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the program, Mark and Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press. This segment of the show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. First three callers through at 780-1290. That's the first three callers through right now at 780-1290. You're going to win a gift card to go check out Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza and taste the Carbone Coal-Fired difference that I enjoy so much.
Well,
Richie, you enjoy so much. In your new place, you're going to be very close to going
there.
And Ezzy's going to be there today.
Right now.
That's where he's
going to
hit. Yeah.
Well, we just got a tweet from Ezzy. You know, he says they're warming up for their next race. And, you know, we're warming up for next race. And then he says Molson Coors and Labatt Blue. So, you know, as you can see, Ezzy is going to be a fantastic Dragon Boat.
I'm actually a little bit concerned he might fall in the river. Do they wear life jackets?
I don't think so. But I almost assume that they've just tied him to the boat in the river.
And by the way, that's Labatt Bleu if you wanted the job in Montreal.
If you wanted the job in Montreal, exactly. That's a separate issue altogether. But anyway, so Ezzy's well underway to not making it to 6 o'clock tonight.
No chance.
No chance, yeah, exactly. Especially, what was he doing till 3 a.m. last night? Because I was at home, and you were at home. So
I'd love to know.
You know, that's everybody he knows. Right there. That's everybody in a nutshell. Anyways, Carbone coal-fired pizza gift cards available, 780-1290. Give us a shout. Talk to Remus. He's on the other side of the glass taking your calls. Continuing where we left off about goaltending and the concept of not... In baseball, the concept is not to pay for saves.
Yeah.
And well, in hockey, the analytics say don't pay for goaltending. Why is that? What is it about goaltending that makes it not worth their value?
Well, I mean, one of the issues is, you know, if you look at top defensemen, you know, or top forwards, you look at Drew Doughty, right? Drew Doughty was number two pick. The second he showed up, they said, hey, you got a shot to be Niedermeyer. Would you ever draft a goalie in that slot? You wouldn't. I mean, it's just that difficult or that much more difficult to identify good talent. And you see guys like Jonas Hiller or Nicholas Backstrom, who literally come out of nowhere.
Tim Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. Guys who were toiling in obscurity, and then they show up. But then, like Backstrom, you know, they appear to lose a lot of their talent very quickly. And so, you know, one of the most interesting things I found is that if you look at a forward or a defenseman, the younger he starts his career in the NHL, the longer his career is going to be. So if a player starts playing at age 18, his career is going to be about 75 games longer than if he starts at age 19. And goaltenders, that's not true. Goaltenders have, on average, about a 200-game career, regardless of what age they come up at. So if you come up at age 29, you're going to play 200 games. If you come up at age 21, you're going to play 200 games. And so it's just that difficult to evaluate what a goaltender's true talent level is. And
is that because, you know, it's a, you know, a greater wear and tear on goaltenders, so that there's less of a, say, long-term success? Or, you know, why would that be? It seems like a defenseman would take more punishment, you know, than a goaltender would on a game in, game out basis.
Yeah, but it's more of a question of actually doing the evaluation. You know, you have to watch just so many reps to understand whether a goaltender is any good, and it's probably 100 games to figure out if the goaltender is significantly better than average. And so you get very confused by short-term success. You know, look at a guy like James Reimer. I mean, obviously he created a career for himself by having 13 good games right at the beginning. James Reimer actually had come up and had sat on the bench in 12 straight games. His first 12 games in the NHL, he didn't get to play. So he's on the roster and didn't get into a game. So clearly the Leafs didn't think that highly of him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he put up good performance in a small sample size, and they dropped a contract on him. And now again, you know, as happens in Toronto, you know, as has happened from the days of Alan Bester and Mike Palmateer and whoever else you want, he's not the team savior. And this is the problem that people run into all the time in evaluating goaltenders. It's just you don't have 100 games to figure out if a guy's any good. So you have to make a call much earlier on. And you just can't have the confidence in your decision at that point.
So you say that obviously we can, any casual hockey fan can see that the Ilya Bryzgalov contract is not a good contract given his performance. But, you know, the Pekka Rinne contract,
it's a bad contract no matter what his performance. Really.
Right. But I mean, but Pekka Rinne, a guy on Nashville that most would put up at the sort of the top goaltenders in the league, by your analysis or the statistical analysis, would say that's also a bad contract.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, it's the length of goaltending careers is just too short to justify a contract of that length. But also the value that the goaltender brings on the ice. It, you know, there's no goalie who's really worth $7 million a year in this league. And a lot of that is because there is actually a surplus of talent. Like we already know. I mean, you can find a guy like Hiller and bring him over for next to nothing. So there are guys all over the place who have, you know, sufficient talent to play in the NHL and be, you know, essentially play at what is the NHL league average and not cost you very much. And, you know, we see more and more teams doing that. The amount of money spent on goaltenders has been decreasing significantly every single year since the lockout ended. So a lot of teams are becoming aware of that, but unfortunately, enough teams are unaware of that we still get these out-and-out crazy contracts to goaltenders.
You hear that?
Let's just direct that towards the Jets for a second here. Andre Pavlik is a RFA this year, so you're going to get to see how the Jets value goaltending in terms of the economic ramifications of signing a guy and for how long and for what the amount is per year and what the term is. And that's going to be on display this summer. I mean, right now, we have no idea because the contracts before were inherited.
You did, I mean, during the course of the season, you did an analysis mm-hmm. for IllegalCurve.com that said this is what the Jets should offer Andre Pavlik.
No, I didn't say that. I said this is what, based upon the agent and based upon the team, this is where I think they might meet. I'm not saying that I personally would sign the deal.
Okay, fine. Sorry, I misrepresented you. Now, is there? You know, so you know, what amount of money for a goaltender would give them value?
Well, I mean, I think you want to look at, say, Los Angeles and Phoenix this year. I mean, I think that Phoenix has spent, what, $4.2 million between LaBarber and Smith, somewhere in that range, maybe even less.
I think it's less than that.
Yeah, and the Kings, I mean, obviously Bernier is still, you know, a young player, but I mean, the Kings are spending even less than that.
Three, I think, right?
Yeah, so they're spending even less money than that on Quick and Bernier. And that was a decision they made. I think you can go out every single year and find adequate goaltending for $1 to $1.5 million a year. And I know that people are concerned. GMs are always concerned about locking up a guy who has apparent talent.
Phoenix is paying $3.25 million for their goaltending duo.
And one thing that you can check LA right now, Drew. But I think one thing that should be pointed out that needs to be considered here is, of course, now when you have a cap, money spent on goaltending within a team's budget, whether it be up to the top of the cap or near the bottom of the cap, that takes away money from another player that they would spend. Whereas in a non-cap league, sure, you could be overpaying a guy, but you might have an endless payroll like the Yankees, and it might not be as big of a deal kind of thing. So this is when you're a team that has a payroll of $55 million and you're paying your goalie six, not three, well, there's $3 million on defenseman or forward that you could be spending.
Yeah, it's just much less efficient to spend money on goaltenders. And, you know, I mean, Nashville's an obvious case here. I mean, do you want Weber and Suter or do you want Rinne? And when guys like Craig Anderson are just floating around there ready to give you roughly the same performance as Rinne, why go $7 million on a goalie?
And you talk about backups, just for a second, you talk about backups and, you know, Gabe says there's a talent and there's widely available. Look at it. Corey Schneider could play, could start for many teams, Jonathan Bernier,
Josh Harding,
Tuukka Rask.
Right.
I mean, you can. And what about Ottawa? You could say Robin Lehner or Ben Bishop possibly could. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's many backup goalies who are qualified.
Is the concept or the cliche of a goaltender stealing a game or stealing a series, is that a fallacy simply because it's really more the defense in front of them that steals it?
Well, it's confirmation bias, because if you win a series, then you have good save percentage, and people attribute that to the goaltender. But there's almost no relationship between playoff save percentage and career in-season save percentage, or even that season's save percentage. The teams that win are the teams that don't get scored on, and it's almost a, you know, it becomes a tautology that the goaltender was that good, and that's why the team won. But you don't see that evidence anywhere else.
Okay. I guess also in terms of the goaltending, you know, game to game, the goalies can steal games. I mean, if their goalie's incredible in a 45-save effort and the team is playing awful in front of them, sure, it doesn't mean that the goalie can't. But I think it's just signing a contract as a whole is a different story.
If you could find Jacques Plante was a guy who was that much better than everybody else. You know, that's the kind of guy you would drop that money on. But it's a once-in-a-generation.
Right?
Yeah, once-in-a-generation talent. You know, Hasek, Plante, but, you know, otherwise, go for a league average goalie and don't spend that much money.
Moving away from goaltenders, we spoke about Brizgalo, we spoke about Rinne. You mentioned, in the show notes that we have here, Peter Pruka. Is that Peter Pruka you're talking
that
about?
That is
here?
Peter Pruka, yeah.
And Patrick Koletta.
Yeah.
Are two guys that are undervalued?
Massively, massively undervalued.
Explain why, because those are not two guys who are household hockey names.
I know. So one of the things, most players who draw penalties are guys like, Sidney Crosby or Henrik Zetterberg or Datsyuk. Yeah, I mean, people. Well, Brown's a different story. But most of them are guys with great moves, breakaway speed, top offensive players who get into a position where they just have to be hauled down in order to prevent a goal. But there are a handful of guys who don't bring a ton of other ability to the table. Pruka was a guy who...
Is Peter Pruka still in the NHL?
He's in the KHL.
Okay, because I didn't think he was in the NHL anymore.
Yeah, so he spent last year in the minors where he put up a point a game, and then he went to the KHL because he didn't have any takers. And he's a guy who has had, he draws so many penalties. I mean, he's been a disappointment to people because I think in his rookie season with the Rangers, he scored 27 goals, and people saw him as, somebody who was going to be this massive offensive talent. And, he's never really approached that, but he's a great defensive player. And he's, sort of 10 standard deviations out in terms of drawing penalties. And so,
what does he do so well that enables him to draw these penalties?
Well, that's something that I don't think is really clear. I mean, obviously he's somebody who mixes things up. I mean, why does Dustin Brown draw penalties? I mean, at some point he's annoyed all of his opponents.
Yeah, Coletta's the exact player we're talking about. He's a rat.
Yeah, Coletta's a rat. I mean, Coletta is Dustin Brown without the offensive talent.
That's exactly
but these are guys who get paid very, very little money. And, I mean, maybe Buffalo is aware of Coletta's value and they're just underpaying him because he doesn't know his own value. But Pruka is a guy who's the prime example of free talent. When they used to say, free such and such player in Major League Baseball because, free Matt Stairs, free Jack Cust. There was a guy who had this talent and nobody wanted him. And Pruka is really that guy. Pruka is a guy who no NHL team wanted him at any meaningful value.
A lot of the teams now are obviously employing these sort of the statistical analysts and the advanced metrics guys to help in their own organization. Are agents doing the same thing to really get their understand their players' value in the new statistics as I'll call them?
I don't think that anybody is actually employing any rigorous statistical analysis. I think that we know that there are teams that have tried to do things, but I don't think anybody's bought into it in any meaningful way. And I don't think that the sort of the new style of analysis has made much of an inroad.
In baseball, it has, though.
In baseball, yes. Obviously, in baseball, all 30 teams, well, except for the San Francisco Giants, who are, hopelessly old school, everybody else has an analysis team, and they're working very hard on this. Agents in baseball, a lot of it's more about marketing your player, so, they tend to go for they tend to still, put a book together with RBIs. So that's a little bit old school. But the NHL, I mean, honestly, someone who has very inside knowledge of this, describe to me the process of, say, finding a second-line center. A team will put a chart up on the board with 23 slots. They'll put a dollar value into the slot, and then they'll go out and they'll find somebody who they perceive to be a second-line center who's going to sign for $2.5 million a year. And there's nothing. It's this sort of holistic, qualitative sense of who's a second line center, but it's not attached to anything more complex than goals and assists, and maybe a quick look at plus minus and time on ice. So it's pretty disheartening, actually, to tell you the truth.
Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about how teams actually decide how much to pay their players. We'll go through a variety of teams in the NHL and analyze their skill and success at signing their signing talent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Congratulations to Dale, Craig, and Randy for winning the gift cards from Carbone Coal Fired Pizza.
And Ezzy.
Was that
Dale Howarchuk who called in for that
Dale
pizza?
Howarchuk, no. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and our colleague for the week, Gabe Desjardins. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. If you want to read more of Gabe's work, it is available at behindthenet.ca or on his Twitter page at behindthenet. Now, before we get into the sort of the team analysis, the real question, the burning question, is who do you like better? Because you've been cited in a number of different sources in the, you know, in the print media and the online.
Here we go.
You know, who do you like better, James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail or Elliot Friedman of CBC? Because they both seem to like you very much.
They do like you.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I met up with James on Sunday night in Toronto, mm-hmm. and he did not pay for my drinks.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's an easy one then.
Wow. That's awkward.
So Elliot.
He paid for Gabe's drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. So Elliot was not available, but he swears that he's going to take me out for Whitefish sandwiches at Toronto's Best Deli next time I'm in town.
So, yeah, so it sounds like James is going to have to pick up his game a little bit.
Yeah, just a little
capers.
Bit.
Yeah, well, that's what Remus is asking right now. Are there going to be capers?
See?
No, you know, on the whitefish salad, I don't think it's tradition.
No capers?
No, maybe I'll put a cucumber on top of it. I actually, you know, I went to United Bakers Deli, not to, like, give a shout-out to somebody who hasn't paid to sponsor, but I was in Toronto for about a day and a half.
Okay, it's in Toronto, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I ate there twice, and I don't think I had that many meals, and I still hit the place up twice, because that is absolutely one of my favorite restaurants in the entire world.
Oh, there you go. And if James Myrtle had paid for you, then he would be your favorite journalist right now.
That's very true.
Yeah, well, that's a little awkward. We'll have to confront James about that next time he's on with us. Team by team, you know, we were talking about the statistical analysis and everything else. You know, which teams are at the upper echelon of you know, maintaining smart payroll strategies, let's call it that, and which teams are at the bottom of the barrel?
Well, I think that Calgary is probably at the bottom of the barrel. That seems like a pretty ugly situation. I mean, they're right at the cap, right? And they're a bad team, and it doesn't seem any way to dig out of that. So that's very problematic. You know, Toronto's probably in a similar situation, although they have so much revenue that I guess they can bury their mistakes if they need to. On the other end, you know, Nashville has always been a team that's been cited with good cap management. But a lot of that came from exceptional drafting.
Well, I was just going to say, like, they had drafted really well. But if you look at their last 2 years, they haven't drafted nearly as well. And then they gave Rene this contract that makes you wonder.
Yeah, well, did they not draft both Weber and Suter in the same year, first and second round? I mean, you can't, you know, nobody does that. Nobody ever pulls that off. So that was just massively good drafting luck. And so you can't count on that. And obviously, yeah, signing Rene kind of punches a hole in that theory. So, you know, the problem is that there's with the cap and the floor, there's just such a small spread between what teams spend. And now that you only have control over your draft picks, you know, as ELCs for 3 years, there isn't a way to get tremendous value.
ELCs being entry level contracts.
So you can no longer extract massive amount of value from young players. So it's most teams are sitting in this tiny little band. Within plus or minus $5 million, around $55 or $57 million. And so that's only plus or minus two wins in either direction. So there isn't really a team. You know, I mean, I'd like to see a team commit to being at the floor and try and win the Stanley Cup, because we haven't seen anything even remotely like that.
We have a CBA negotiation coming up in this offseason. This is going to be, you look at the players and the players are going to probably, the owner's going to ask for a reduction in the hockey-related income that goes to the players. Right now it's 57% of all revenue has to go back to the players in salaries. That's going to be what we expect to be their bargaining position. You know, what are the players? You look at this current CBA, you look at the current landscape in hockey. Now, this isn't specific to your statistical analysis or anything. What are the players going to ask in return? You know, where are the players' negotiation? Where's their line in the sand?
Well, I don't think that the players should accept less than 57%. I mean, you look at basketball and football. They're roughly in the same range, and
They're both significantly lower now.
Right? I thought the NFL was still at 57.
I think it's 52.
The NFL is down 52.
And the NBA is 50.
And the NBA is a 50-50 split.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you look at the way that the previous CBA was negotiated, right, you had sort of an escalating percentage as revenues went up, and revenues are so much higher now that they're well above the top end of what anybody ever predicted.
The cap was $39 million when they came back.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're about 30% above the revenues that they ever could have possibly expected. Right. You know, the league said, hey, 57%, no problem. We're never going to make that much money that we'll be paying out 57%. And I mean, I think that, you know, the starting point should be, stay at 57, and you know, if the owners want realignment and less than 57, I can't even see what they'd have to give up there.
Well, that's just, I mean, and that's my, you know,
I'm assuming that, sorry to interrupt you, I'm assuming that the if they're going to try and cut down the split again. And they're probably going to want a cap on term of contracts to help save themselves, which is really what the CBA always is. So they'd want even earlier UFA status.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing to me, though, is that you know there is always this notion that somehow salary caps in the CBA are in there to protect the owners from themselves. But the only sport that doesn't have it is baseball. And baseball has driven down through a variety of things, but a lot through intelligent front office work, has driven down the percentage of money that goes to the players below the other sports. So even though three sports did this to protect themselves, it's the sport that didn't protect itself and that has, you know, in some cases, unlimited deep pockets to spend on players.
And the biggest issue is the floor, right? Because you have teams who aren't making money having to spend to the floor, knowing that spending to the floor will make them lose money.
Yeah, I think the floor's got to go.
Do you chalk that up in baseball about the how there's no cap yet salaries are trending downwards? Do you chalk that up? Is it better statistical analysis of the players themselves, or is it collusion?
No, I don't think it's collusion. I mean, I think they're just you know there were verifiably dumb contracts that used to get handed out all the time, buying saves, like you said. And these things just don't happen anymore. The information, you know, you look at hockey, 21, 22 of the teams are run by former NHL players. You look at baseball, there's only a handful of guys.
Two, I think it is.
Yeah, and one of them.
Two were the general managers.
Used to play baseball.
Used to play.
And then majors, yeah, two guys.
Yeah, and so, I mean, these guys did come up through.
Yes. Ruben Amaro Jr. and.
Well, Kenny Williams.
Kenny Williams.
Well, yeah. Billy Beane used to play in the majors.
Well, that's true.
So
yeah.
There's
but it's just a handful of guys. You know, and so you have...
Is that a sign of a more mature business model in baseball?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, can somebody... How often do you find somebody who's good at two things, who is, you know, a 99.99th percentile baseball player, and somebody who's, you know, good enough to essentially run a $200 million a year organization? It's not a common thing. So, you know, the qualification... It's again, it's like our discussion about French-Canadian coaches. Your qualification to be essentially the CEO of this organization should not be that you played hockey, because you're really tightening up the number of guys who are available to you. And we obviously see, I mean, who are the general managers in the Stanley Cup Finals this year, right? I mean, you know, Dean Lombardi, I mean, he did, you know, he played a little bit of hockey, you know, 35 years ago. But, you know, fundamentally he's a lawyer, right? So... You know, it's more just an intelligent way to run the business. You know, if these are just a bunch of family run teams, so be it. You know, you can get a guy who used to play hockey on your team. But if you want to take it seriously as a business, I think you need to expand your hiring pool.
Let's leave it there. When we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Martin Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. You're listening to TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program. He is the business reporter for the Winnipeg Free Press, Martin Cash. Martin, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Martin, it's been about a year since we last had you on, about a year since the return of the Jets to Winnipeg. You know, has the impact on downtown Winnipeg been felt on non-game days?
Geez, you know, it's hard to really put too fine a point on it, I think. You know, I mean, as any of us know, when you go down on game nights, if you go downtown and try to enter any drinking or eating establishment, you know, they're full. You know, and I do know that lots of the downtown restaurants and bars, you know, love the Jets and have really benefited from it. And I think, generally speaking, yes, I think that the downtown has been impacted positively from, you know, from the Jets being back in town. You know, the fact is, I would say that, you know, the timing was right. Lots of things had been in the works, you know, sometime before a year ago when, you know, when the big announcement was made. So, you know, these things, you know, they can't happen overnight, but, you know, there's lots of stuff going on downtown now. And, you know, and not only that, I would say that, you know, that the impact, that the goodwill that's been engendered and the heightened confidence and optimism that, you know, that we all feel about, you know, about having the Jets back in town. I think we all feel better about the city. And that has a definite impact on business. I mean, you know, you talk to anybody about, you know, about like business climate and attitude, you know, all business people need to be kind of upbeat, you know, for business to do well. And it's just so much easier to be upbeat now. I think it, you know, it may be hard to actually, you know, put the right sort of metrics on it, but I think, you know, no one would deny that that the presence of the Jets in town has had a positive impact on the business community here, and not just the, you know, not just the downtown restaurants either.
Martin, from your perspective, has the, you know, the positive ramifications of the return of the Jets, you know, economically, has that exceeded your expectations?
Well, you know, like I say, I think the timing was kind of, you know, was fantastic. I regularly hear people say to me, just a week and a half ago, Barry Rempel, the CEO of the Winnipeg Airports Authority, you know, they've done a massive, you know, redevelopment of the airport. And, you know, he was saying, now they go out, and when they're talking to airlines about air routes into Winnipeg, it's an easier conversation for them to have, especially in, you know, among U.S. carriers, for instance. Rempel says, you know, they all immediately think of the Jets. Not to say that they've landed regularly scheduled flights to New York or, you know, or Los Angeles or San Francisco or anything like that, which they'd like to be able to do. But, you know, it's that much easier for them to start those conversations. You know, that kind of stuff, I think most business people would say, you know, it's a half decent, you know, it's a new card they get to play now. You know, also, you know, another area that you know is starting to have impact. You know, recruiters in Winnipeg have always complained about how it's a hard place to recruit to top level talent or even mid level talent, and you know now there's another, you know, another perk that you know that may make it easier to attract folks to town. I think all those kind of incremental things, you know, like I say, they may be unquantifiable, but they're undeniable as well.
So, Martin, I live in San Francisco, and for five straight losing seasons, you know, nobody cared about the San Francisco Giants. All of a sudden, they get in the playoffs, and I go to a bar or restaurant in my neighborhood. The game's on, the place is packed, and that's continued on for a couple of years. Do you think that we saw the sort of the ceiling in terms of the economic impact in this first season with all the excitement, or is there even more of a possibility if the team makes a legitimate playoff run?
Well, you know, I think that that's a really interesting question, and probably one that's you know, the answer is probably indecipherable just now. But you know, you guys know as well as anybody that the management folks at True North Sports and Entertainment, they're on the ball. They know exactly what you're talking about, and I'm sure they're being careful about those sorts of things. You know, I think that, you know, apropos to what we've been talking about already, I think the fact that the ownership group and the team management, the club management, is an excellent bunch. I think they've been doing very good work, and I think that, that they'll try to, address that so that they, you know, keep, you know, this kind of goodwill happening irrespective of the performance of the team. It, you know, I obviously at the same time, you know, as fans, we all hope that, you know, that they, you know, build a winning team because, yeah, you know, as a sports fan, I know about jumping on and off bandwagons and that's you know, an important factor for sure. But, yeah, so, you know, I don't know how these things go. And I think, yes, like I say, I think we're all on a bit of a high now. I mean, all Winnipeggers, you know, we all sort of have lived through the, you know, the kind of, you know, lousy reputation that the city sometimes has had. And, you know, and as residents of the city, you know, I think we all sort of appreciate that, okay, yeah, Winnipeg's got some rough edges, and it's Winnipeg. There's never going to be a huge, you know, growth levels in Winnipeg are never going to be like they are in boom towns. Yeah, I say Winnipeg will never be a boom town, but, you know, there's enough depth and substance in this town, I would argue, that... yeah, and enough hockey fans that I think you know, we'll be able to sort of endure the ups and downs and you know, and I know there was a story in the paper not so long ago about how Winnipeg Jets licensed product, you know, merchandise is, you know, the best sellers in the league. Well, that clearly is not going to be the case year after year because it was, you know, it was starting from zero and there'll be some, you know, there'll be some tail off there. But yeah, you know. I think that you know that there'll be some sustaining momentum here. I really do.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press. Now, Martin, when the Jets came back, one of the sort of concerns of people was that the Jets' new business would negatively impact other businesses that rely on, you know, people spending their entertainment dollar. Is there any evidence to that effect? Say that the ballet or the theater had a downturn as a result of the Jets coming back.
You know, I'm not so aware of all those numbers, but. You know, it's life in the big city. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, there's some guys are going to, you know, do better than others. You know, there is a history of, you know, of patronage of the arts in this town. And, you know, and I don't think that's going to stop. You know, I think, like, as I say, I think the Winnipeg Jets and True North, you know, they have done an amazing job of marketing. You know, those other guys are going to have to do a better job of marketing as well. As people with families in Winnipeg, you know, are going to continue to sort of, you know, have their kids in, you know, whatever kind of lessons and, you know, and will continue to, you know, to be proud of the, you know, the cultural sort of institutions in this town and patronize them, you know, as they can. If there was a tail off on some of the, let's say the large arts institutions, well, it's on them to deal with that. They ought to be as, you know, they can feel the benefits of, you know, of the, you know, the positive momentum that we all feel about this town, it, you know, whatever it is, however much of that is attributed to the Jets, you know, they too can benefit from that. So, yeah, you know, I think that's a point and it's an issue that some of those guys are going to have to deal with. But, you know, I don't want to be too glib, but, yeah, it's life in the big city. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be some challenges and blips and every organization has to deal with that kind of stuff.
Martin, can you talk about, you know, Shed and its impact on downtown?
Jeez, it is. I think it's amazing, and you know, and I know that that's been something that's been in the works for a long time. You know, for instance, I mean, we all know that Metropolitan Theater on Donald Street, across from the MTS Center. I mean, you know, there's been talk of a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or some kind of themed supper club there for many years, and you know, as we see, there's, you know, construction hoarding up there now. There's actually some work going on there. You know, we see the, you know, the Alt Hotel and that development, you know, on the north side of Portage. Mm-hmm. There, you know, the Chipman crowd. You know, I was saying to somebody the other day, they're gold plated. Those guys, they've really got it together. You know, the fact that the, you know, the family has, you know, real estate professionals in there, you know, among their family and in their sort of professional holdings. So, you know, they've got that project on the go. you know, I personally had the chance to, you know, to report on the opening of a condo project on Princess mm-hmm. Street this week. And, you know, on the east and west side of the exchange, there's a whole bunch of apartments and condos being built. You know, the thing that this city has always lacked was a vibrant downtown residency. There's not enough people living downtown, and there weren't enough places for them to live. Now there's more and more places being built in buildings that had previously basically been empty. So, you know, the densification of downtown, it's happening. And not only that, but like you say, you know, there's a real organized approach to it. You know, with this shed district, and you know, I know that, for instance, you know, Market Street will. There's a bunch of streetscaping and you know, investment in the you know, in street level kind of looks to the city. So, you know, yeah, Winnipeg hasn't been the most pedestrian friendly kind of city around, and you know, with more people living downtown, there ought to be more people walking the streets downtown, and so it behooves the city to, you know, to make that, you know, that street level work better and look nicer. And you know, it probably will never be enough for some of us, but it's being addressed, I think, and you know, it'll remain to be seen just how excellent it's going to be, but it's happening. You know, that convention center is going to be expanding. I mean, that thing is going to happen, and that's really going to make a big difference and be a very large, a new there'll be much more dense you know, activity downtown. I mean, we all see all those surface parking lots, probably more than any other downtown, you know, in North America, and those things are going to get filled in the next, you know, 5 years. It's going to be good. And you know, like we, you know, you guys like to chew over this stuff, and you know, we all do. It'll be hard to as I said, to quantify exactly how much of it is the Jets were responsible for. But you got to know that they're a big part of it. And you know, I think it's probably working out about as best as you know, as well as it, you know, as anybody could have imagined. I think it's really it's working very well.
So beyond Chipman, who you mentioned, I mean, who else has significant interest in downtown revitalization, just as individuals?
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys. You know, I think one of the things that, you know, when I was thinking about talking to you guys about this, one of the things I was thinking about is that there's a bit of a generational change that's occurring in Winnipeg. You know, as I was saying, you know, it's a hard place to, you know, to recruit new folks to. And so, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of the homegrown investors and developers who need to do projects. And there are folks who are doing that. Now, I'm not sure what the specific names of some of these guys are. You know, we could look them up. But, you know, and not only that, but, you know, that reputation that Winnipeg had. I mean, I'm a homeowner in Winnipeg, and basically throughout the 90s, so real estate values didn't really change. And now they are. You know, so now real estate values in Winnipeg are worthy of investors from elsewhere, and they're at prices that are far more reasonable than they are in places like Vancouver and Toronto and Calgary. So it's attracting investors from out of town as well. So, you know, there's a lot of options. And these center venture folks who have, you know, all these kind of abandoned and you know, somewhat orphaned properties that, you know, that they're sort of making available and putting and getting on the market. There's activity. Again, fellas, you know, you got to remember it's Winnipeg, and so it's not like there's going to be, you know, 40-story condo buildings being built left and right. But there's far more of that kind of activity going on now than there has been ever. So, yeah, there's, you know, the other thing, too, about the Winnipeg side of things is that there is a conservative investment climate that probably, you know, works to the city's advantage in that, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, booms and busts or bubbles in the market. So there's a fairly organized momentum. Conservative investors who make sure that the projects that they're building are going to work. You know, there's a bunch of stuff going on.
We'll leave it there. Martin Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much for your insight into the Winnipeg business community 1 year following the return of the Jets.
Okay, nice talking to you guys.
Take care, Martin. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of that interview or the ones with George Johnson or Pat Hickey prior, you can download the show on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Who'd you pick for Euro 2012, Drew?
I really didn't pick anybody.
Brazil?
I picked the racist chance to beat the enforcement of the racist chance.
Well, what a safe bet there, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the best part is, I'll tell you what, I don't want to get into it because I'm not a soccer guy by any stretch, and I'm not going to pretend to be, but UEFA then denying that the chants were racially motivated, I'm like, rarely do you get a confusion about a racist chant. Either it's racist or it's not.
It's true.
You know, there's not very much in between there, usually.
It's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to racist
chants. You can't know what's in their hearts, though. Come on.
Well, don't let it out. If it's in their hearts,
to quote Clayton Bigsby. Which is Dave Chappelle's character.
Yeah, Dave Chappelle.
And
his
inaugural episode of The Chappelle Show was, if you have hate in your heart, let it out.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, Dave Chappelle was pretty good at
making
light of it.
It was a joke.
Some of the stuff that you've heard or seen is no joke whatsoever. And it's actually putting a cloud over what's going to be, I'm sure, some fabulous soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it was anticipated. From what I heard, it was anticipated, and they talked about it, and then they still did it.
Well, there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you know, how do you enforce people from not being stupid?
It's ridiculous.
Exactly. Anyways, I hope the soccer.
Isn't that going on for soccer? Isn't there a lot of racist and ethnic issues in soccer in terms of taunts and such? Yeah.
Yeah, there are. I mean, I hope that the soccer overshadows any of that, but I'm skeptical in terms of my confidence there. But you know, the quality of soccer, I'm sure, will be fabulous.
Eh. Let's talk hockey.
Okay, let's talk hockey.
I just brought it up as a joke.
I took it seriously. You wouldn't expect anything different. We were talking off air prior to the show about Paul Maurice. He's now going to coach in the KHL.
Yeah.
You know, he's on a one-year deal there. He's taking Tom Barrasso with him. He gets paid $2 million for the 1 year to coach in the KHL.
Well, he's supposed to be getting paid $2 million. Who knows whether or not they actually are going to pay him?
Well, okay, I mean, he signed
the KHL here, Drew. Take it easy.
I think any KHL move is pretty low risk. You know, you can do what Nabokov did. Just say, hey, family issues and leave and take an NHL contract anytime you feel like it.
Are you surprised that he went there? It's not like he was Bob Hartley, who flamed out after a number of years as last coaches. No pun intended. Who had to then go to Switzerland and sort of rebuild his career. Paul Maurice is still held in pretty high regard. So I don't quite understand what his logic would be to go, besides the money, why he would go and coach the KHL.
Although Paul Maurice, Drew, I mean, he's had three jobs, two of which with the same team, for Jimmy Rutherford. So aside from Jimmy Rutherford, I mean, and John Ferguson, who else has held him in high regard? No disrespect to him. Maybe he feels like he needs to have a successful year like Hartley did overseas to kind of recreate interest in his coaching ability. He's got that dry sense of humor, that delivery, and he's a good coach, but he's not the dynamic personality, I don't think, that maybe the next team is looking for. And I wonder if maybe he feels like he needs to also, you know, there's that element of connecting with the European and Russian players, and maybe he had a trouble with that. I have no clue, but I'm saying maybe he wants to develop that kind of reputation too. I remember when Pat Quinn got hired for the Oilers, he went back and coached the junior team to say he could coach young players. There's always that motivation of the person that we're not necessarily aware of.
I still don't understand Magnitogorsk. I mean, if you look at where that
was well done, I gotta say.
Well, he's got it on the Google Map here.
Yeah, I got it on the map. I mean, it's near the
team is the team for you know for the people just joining us. The team he's going to coach is Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
Yeah, and it is literally it's I mean Metallurg is exactly what you think it is. It's some kind of strip mining near the Kazakhstan border. It is about as far from humanity as you can possibly.
It's not like it's a team.
Well, that's where Malkin played though.
Yeah,
they have big money. Obviously, they paid $2 million. Yeah,
yeah, but it's not like it's a team in Moscow where you know you can also add a bit of a tourist element to it.
Metallurg, I believe, was a team that also Dave King coached when Eric DeHatrick wrote the book about him, The King of Russia.
Okay, right. So maybe there's an
opportunity. It's a good book, there, by the way. I recommend it.
Yeah. It's kind of like Al Waxman, King of Kensington. That makes me sound old.
It makes you sound very old. I got to tell you. Yeah, they just signed Matt Zuccarello, the same team
who I really like. Actually, I got to see him play this year in for Hartford in Connecticut. And for Hartford in Connecticut. And I thought somebody the Jets might want to be interested in. He's a nice passer. He moves the puck well. He can stick handle well. He's not a big guy, but a guy who could, I think, be useful on the power play. I'm surprised the Rangers didn't have any use for him down the stretch, although he's not a Tortorella-type player. I'm surprised another National Hockey League team wouldn't have found use for him in some way.
Well, it doesn't even seem like he tested the market very well. He left well before July 1st.
Probably getting more money there, though, Drew. A player, I think, will reappear in the NHL before too long.
Also, in the KHL, you can use a longer stick.
It's like 5'4".
Yeah, I understand that. Speaking of the KHL, Alex Radulov, it's the Predators announced that he's not going to be
Radulov.
Back. Yeah.
He said Radulov.
Sorry, Radulov is not going to be back with the Predators next year after what, flamed out. I mean, again, pardon the pun.
Well, he didn't go with the Flames, so there's no pun.
Okay, fine. But his poor performance in the...
Yeah, it's odd, Drew. They bring him back. They take a leap of faith in him for whatever reason. Nobody really understands it. He does basically what they thought he'd do in terms of character-wise, and then they say they're done with him. And not only are they done with him, but they tell the whole world they're done with him. Yeah, so there goes your leverage.
Yeah, it's a good way to blow up whatever value you had
exactly.
in the play.
Doesn't make any sense. It's really odd. It was odd all the way around.
I don't mind the risk bringing him back.
No, I realize that, but then you risk bringing him back, and then you use his character issues to bench him, and then you make him even more of a distraction than he probably already is.
People probably, even if they didn't come out and say that we had no use for him anymore, people probably knew that. But again, once you, like you said, it kills all your leverage. It just seems like a bad, he's an asset. Even if you don't really like him, he's still an
That's
asset
right.
that
That's
you
exactly
have under
right.
your control.
That's exactly
so
right.
why do you tarnish your own assets?
It's an odd move.
It's like putting your house for sale and saying, oh, it's a terrible street and the house is falling apart, but why you should be interested in buying
That's exactly
it.
Right. And, they're going to be going in the draft in a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
And that's, I assume, where you're going to get the most interest. People have a better idea of what money they have to spend and not spend, and there's more of an idea of what the cap's going to be, although the pending CBA negotiations will curb that a bit because people won't know exactly what the cap will go down to if the revenue split is different. But having said that, the draft's probably where you're going to trade him, and then you say that 3 weeks before the draft. It's weird.
Yeah, you should always pump up your players. There's never an excuse for cutting a guy down.
It just logically, based on the simple business concepts, it doesn't make any sense.
It's not like he was a fan favorite and people would have cared if they traded him.
Right. It just, there was something very bizarre about it. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go more around the NHL, and Remus has an Ezra-related Illegal Curve sports update. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, Gabe Desjardins, and Michael Remus has joined us as well. As you notice there's one usual name that I did not mention. That is our good friend Ezra Ginsberg. He's participating in a Dragon Boat competition. I guess it's still ongoing. I think his next race is coming up in about 15 minutes' time or so. Remus had the opportunity to sit down with Ezra after their first race. Here's the audio from that interview.
I'm Michael Remus, and this is your Illegal Curve News Update. Regular analyst of the show, Ezra Ginsberg, was not present in studio today. He's been at the River City Dragon Boat Festival with his team, the Schooners. After two races, Ezra's feeling pretty good about their performance so far.
I'm feeling good. We've gotten down a little bit. We need to win our next race, but we're working hard. Our team never quit. We're a never-say-die team. We just have to get, more paddles in the water, get more pucks on the net.
Being a Dragon Boat racing rookie, Ezra is adjusting to find his role on the team.
I was already told by several people on my team to basically shut up and stop talking so much. After the first race, I got a little bit excited, and I was told to calm down a little bit. But I've taken on more of a little bit of a silent role, and I'm more of a finesse player on the team, just trying to play my role and not get in anyone's way.
Ezra and the Schooners have already raced twice, finishing fourth and then third out of four teams. Here are Ezra's keys to the third race this afternoon.
The rain has made it difficult, and we have to change our game plan a little bit, but we, you know, still have to stick to our strengths, and that's paddling really hard, you know, making sure that we're all on the same page, getting pucks on net, and really just making sure that we, you know, follow the beat of our drummer. A lot of people don't know that in the Dragon Boat Festival, you have a drummer, and that's the person that keeps the beat, so you got to make sure that you're always, you know, focused in on the drummer and just making sure that you're getting lots of paddles in the water.
Ginsburg and the Schooners hope to win their final race at 2:45. For Legal Curve News, I'm Michael Remus.
So listen, how difficult would it be? Those are essentially all the cliches you need to know in order to be a coach in Montreal. How difficult would it be to teach somebody that in French?
I can't imagine it would be very difficult at all, especially the one about banging on the drummer. I mean, Ezzy would have to get that. You'd have to get that one done because that. I love that he said get pucks on net. That's my favorite
brilliant.
Part.
Brilliant. Like, and that, follow the beat of your own drummer. Remus, great job.
Yeah, excellent update, Remus. That was well done. Well, if we get a chance, we'll get the final result in from Ezzy's last Dragon Boat race.
Yes.
You know, prior to getting off the air, or you can just follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve, and you can we'll send it over.
And
as he
give out
Ezzy,
is he live tweeting while paddling?
I would assume
I see Ezzy G.
He usually live tweets while he does everything else in life.
That's true.
You know.
So it's just one hand paddle, and
that would explain the third and fourth place finish if he's not in rhythm with the rest of his team. There's a lot of best parts in that update. I got to tell you,
that was very well done.
But the fact that his teammates told him to be quiet and stop talking too much is right up there in terms of hilarity.
Well, they don't know him though, right?
How would he join the team then if they
didn't
know?
We don't really know any of the details of this.
Well, he messaged us early in the week and he said he's not going to be on the show because he's participating in a Dragon Boat race. And I immediately thought he was joking.
I told Remus on Friday and Remus thought I was making it up to be funny. I'm like, no, I'm serious. He's not coming. He's going to a Dragon Boat race.
Well, nothing about that makes any sense. That's why.
This is an example of like your next best guy being below replacement value. I think there's really some hockey lessons to be learned here.
That's pretty true. You wanted to talk about the Coyotes situation is still ongoing. They've obviously earlier this week they submitted the lease agreement that they had arranged with Greg Jamieson, potential owner of the Coyotes. The Glendale City Council, after winning in court against the Goldwater Group yesterday, passed the lease agreement by a 4-2 margin. You know, you read the lease agreement that Greg Jamieson is getting here, and you know, at some point in time, does the NHL just have to sort of apologize to the people of Glendale?
Well, I mean, I think on a visceral level, you know, I went down to Phoenix to see a game this year, and really, you know, the Glendale Arena District is just a blight upon the face of humanity. You know, they really they decided
that's how you really feel.
Well, no, they decided the desert was a great place to put a Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville, you know, right across from the rink, and I just don't understand how anybody thought that particular real estate development was a good idea.
Is it just the lack of population? Is that the big problem?
Well, it's way outside the city. It's a long distance.
Nowhere.
Yeah, it's a long distance from downtown Phoenix, and it's really far from Scottsdale, which is, you know, where all the players live, and I think where, you know, a lot of the spending money is in Phoenix. But really, it's more that it was just, you know, it probably could have worked, but it was just a bad idea. It was just like somebody went to Vegas and said, let me take all the third tier establishments and drop them in the desert, and this will work out fine. Don't worry about it. You know, I think it's anchored by a Holiday Inn Express. That's the big hotel there. So, you know, that if that gives you a sense of what Glendale looks like at this moment.
Drew did stay at Holiday Inn Express last night.
Yeah, well, that was the only good decision I've made recently. Tim Thomas. We spoke about him last week. Mm-hmm. He's officially announced that he's going to take this year off because of, I'm not quite sure what his logic was. Apparently, he's selling some sort of... It was a weird statement on Facebook. You know, I want to spend time getting to know my family, my friends, my faith, and I'm going to be selling this strange exercise equipment.
Okay.
You know...
He's a strange dude.
He's a strange guy.
Yeah.
But he's always been a strange guy. And I'm sure the Bruins aren't as surprised as maybe other people are
about this move. He's always been a guy to, you know.
Is there going to be any sort of market for in the NHL for a 39-year-old goaltender who hasn't played in a year?
Yeah, because he's proven to
Nabokov,
be really good.
Rollison, yeah. I mean, they're all over the place.
You can play goalie. They'll find you.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where, again, you know, it's the issue of being good at two things. You know, Tim Thomas, I have absolutely no interest in finding out what he has to say about anything else in the world.
Well, nor should you, because it's not like he's one of the, you know, he's a great, you know, philosopher and goaltender. He's just a goaltender with, you know, who's got beliefs, as everybody's entitled to have. But that doesn't mean I'm interested in your beliefs, especially if you're not somebody, you know, tremendously intelligent or tremendously good at articulating them. And that would be true for beliefs on the left side of the spectrum or the right side of the spectrum. Play hockey, talk about hockey. That's pretty much all I need from you.
Yeah, I look to the great philosopher Jeremy Roenick sometimes, but, you know, Tim Thomas, I'm not that interested.
It just seems like he'd be too much of a distraction than he's worth in the dressing room.
Well, I don't really believe in distractions. I think that stuff is, you know, not a huge issue. But I would just think that
you don't think that his activities since he skipped the White House affect the Bruins.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the goalie. I think nobody talks to him anyways. He just goes off and he stands in the net. You know, you can see. I mean, goalies get ignored most of the time. So
by their teammates,
by their teammates. So he goes off. He does his thing. You know, maybe he wears headphones in the dressing room the entire time. And I don't think it's that much of an issue. Even if every single guy on the team hates him and wants nothing to do with him and is totally ignored. I don't think that really impacted.
I think the players were sick of them having to answer questions from what he did. That's what there seemed to be some angst in the locker room because of that.
That to me would be a distraction.
I don't know.
I think there was a distraction there. I think. I mean, also, I think the. He took a stand. Not a stand I don't agree with, but at the same time, I think the team also let it become more of a distraction than it should have been.
Okay, that's fine. David Jones of the Colorado Avalanche. Avalanche made a number of moves this week.
A lot of cash right there.
Yeah, one of them was signing David Jones to a 4-year, $16 million deal. Now, admittedly, I'm not a big follower of the Colorado Avalanche.
He's a big, you know, you can skate pretty well. Big guy, right-handed shooting. It's kind of more of a goal scorer before passer player. You know, probably capable of 20 to 25.
He had 20 this year. He had 20 goals and 37 points this year.
Right, 20 to 25. They're probably banking on 30 there, but it's a lot of money to give for a fairly long time without a certain production. $4 million a year for 4 years. I was surprised by that contract, put it that way.
Yeah, I think Colorado is one of those teams that's just lost. Yeah. And so, you know, we it's almost not worth speculating on what's going on there.
Well, last year they traded the first round pick for Semyon Varlamov. So this move isn't as bad as that one, because it's hard to be as bad as that one. But again, it's indicative of the way they view things.
How much of these moves are just in order to get them to the floor? Cody McLeod got a three-year $3.5 million deal.
But even so, I mean, this whole idea of getting to the cap, then sign a one-year deal. What do you need to sign a four-year deal for to get to the cap for this year?
Yeah, the thing I'd actually like to see, I mean, what's the penalty for not making it to the floor? We don't know what that is. And I'd like to see somebody just challenge the floor. I mean, we see all these teams talking about financial issues and not being able to succeed. Like, why bother throwing $8 million out there at players who have no value?
Especially if the punishment for not making the floor isn't an $8 million punishment.
What could the punishment? I don't even know what it's spelled out as in the CBA. I don't think they ever expected that anybody wouldn't make it up to the floor, because the floor was set so low.
The floor is not way above what the ceiling was at the beginning.
Yeah,
you'd think so.
The ceiling was $39 million, and if you think the cap this year is going to be $73 million. So what'll that make the floor around
50?
50?
Yeah. I mean, that was
almost more than $10 million more than the ceiling was. What, 6 years, 7 years ago?
But yeah, think outside the box. Put together a 65-point team that you pay almost nothing. You know, why bother blowing money on things that you don't need?
This is on the heels of them signing, like I said, Cody McLeod to a 3-year, $3.5 million deal. Matt Hunwick, 2 years, $3.2 million. These aren't, you know, that Colorado team wasn't anything to write home about.
Yeah, why'd they trade away TJ Gagliardi then? They could have paid him too.
The issue with, exactly, Drew, you just mentioned three guys who three guys who are going to be eating up probably about $5 or $6 million right there, and
you probably want a good $5 million player and two young players on the entry-level deals if you could.
Right, you still have to re-sign. You have to re-sign Matt Duchene. You have to re-sign Eric Johnson.
Yeah, now those are both difficult contract situations, and we can talk about that later on going into the summer. But, you know, what are both those players? It's a very interesting question. What is Eric Johnson? And what is Matt Duchene?
Mm-hmm.
And are they more flash than actual production? There's obviously great skill there. But I think those are going to be two interesting negotiations, and based on this, I assume they'll probably overpay both.
I'm trying to remember. I know we played in Colorado this year. Didn't Colorado play here as well?
Yes, I believe so.
The Jets played Colorado twice and beat
them
both times.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know,
we did play here, yeah.
Yeah.
Johnson's a phenomenal player to watch. I mean, he's a guy who stands out, right? You know, a guy who's 6'5 and has hands. So mm-hmm. It's, you know, that's the kind of guy who gets massive amounts of money dumped on him.
But exactly. But this is exactly right. He's a guy who has all the skill and you watch him in practice and you say, oh, look at the way he skates for a big guy. Look at that shot. Look at that. But he doesn't see the game, doesn't make the right reads, and you can't teach that. And so what are they going to pay for a guy like that? That's why St. Louis got rid of him.
Sure.
And that's proven to be the case. I mean, I think that was a good talent evaluation by St. Louis in terms of that. Duchene's a guy you have to wonder just what his ceiling is, but great skater, really good puck mover, really great hands, but can he be a top goal scorer? And what's his offensive upside?
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight, 7:45 and 10:30 p.m., John Roy is going to be on stage, finishing up his first week there. He's there next week as well, right after John Roy, a special concert series event with Alonzo Bowden. You might remember him from Making Fun of You, Richard.
For sticking up for you, Drew.
Yeah. Exactly.
So give full context there.
No, I prefer to give up half of the story. He also won Last Comic Standing, so that's where
He is really funny.
Very funny. One
he's
of the best.
Hilarious, yeah.
If you want to go see John Roy next Friday night at Rumors, give us a call, 780-1290. Give us a call. That's 780-1290, and you can win tickets to go see John Roy perform at Rumors next Friday night.
By the way, not to seem really old again, but I remember when Rumors first opened up, you know, and it was really the nail in the coffin for Yuck Yucks at that point.
It's true. Rumors did drive Yuck Yucks right out of the city. That's a very true comment there. You are old. Jeez, how old are you? You make it sound like you're 100.
On
this show, I'm the old guy. So
yeah,
listen,
yeah, you,
know
I
your role.
You're stealing a thunder
know
right now.
Your role and sit there quietly and stop stealing my bit.
All right, I'm not the eminence grease here. That's fine.
Because Tim actually played the hip coming into this segment because Drew just broke his hip.
Well done, Richard. Bravo. Very impressed. You're almost 30.
I had to get one old joke
there. You're getting to be close to 30. It'll happen to you.
Take it easy there, Drew.
It'll happen to you there too, boy. Don't worry about it. Anyways.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire this week. Los Angeles Kings forward Simone Gagné has been battling concussions for the last little while. Yeah. He played a game in the Cup Finals. Did he play last game, or did they replace him with Richardson?
Played two games.
Played two games now. He talked quite candidly about his struggle with the concussion. He thinks the NHL should implement a concussion support group. Do you think the NHL is doing enough for players that have concussions?
No. I think it's still that macho idea, and they try, and people still hide too much, or they don't. You know, it's like Mark Savard. Okay, Mark Savard. And Matt Cook, the guy who drove Mark Savard out of the league and still can't live a regular day. Matt Cook's running around. Oh, he's a changed man. People just forget about him. I think there needs to be more attention to it, both on and off the ice.
But, you know, I looked at the reported injuries going back for the last seven seasons. And teams in 2005 never reported concussions. And it was only in maybe about 2008 that, you know, the reported injuries on the game sheet actually had guy out with concussion, and it just skyrocketed, you know, to now where they are actually reporting it. So,
well, and there's a liability issue there too, right? The NFL is getting one right, and dealing with that right now. And from people we talk to, the NHL has one on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unfortunate thing. There's probably, you know, player safety has always been at the bottom of the list, yeah. And it takes something absolutely horrible to happen.
That's exactly right.
For any kind of real change in the way that that things are run at the league level.
Peter DeBoer, as anybody who watched Game 4
Well, what about Peter DeBoer?
Well,
nobody watched that in game four.
He had a distraction behind him throughout the course of the game, one that probably caught the attention and got more publicity than the game itself.
Yes.
Now, how much self-discipline do you think it took Peter DeBoer to be able to block out the distractions?
And he was caught once.
And keep his focus squarely on the game in front of him as opposed to the entertainment behind him.
The game behind him?
Yeah.
It's a good question, Drew.
Would you have been able to pull
I would
that
not
out?
Have been able to exhibit such self-discipline, I must say.
Well, you know what's really funny, actually? In San Jose, Chico's Bail Bonds, I believe. No, Bad Boys Bail Bonds.
Yeah, Chico's Bail Bonds is from Bad News Bears.
No, there is a Chico's Bail Bonds in San Jose also.
Okay.
But Bad Boys Bail Bonds. They bought like four season tickets right behind the Sharks bench. And the people who sit there wear these awful, awful Bail Bonds shirts. And so every time the camera goes over to look at the coach, you got four people in Bail Bonds shirts there. And the Sharks actually told them they weren't allowed to wear those shirts anymore, because it was essentially free advertising. So there are, you know, big distractions right behind the bench all the time.
Yeah, but tell you what, that was an impressive distraction. He was like in his press conference. Obviously, yesterday was another off day, so they were desperate for news. And
he was very funny in that press conference.
Yeah,
very funny.
You know, talking about how he was able to block out the distractions and how his wife, you know, gave him credit for being able to do so and everything else, because that wasn't the easiest thing in the world for him to do. You know, I don't even know what the question is on this next one. Charlie Sheen's outburst?
It's brilliant. I have to say, though, I'm not a smoker, but he can't go out for a cigarette and go back in to watch the game. That seems a little bit ridiculous, doesn't it?
Well, they just assumed he's a deadbeat who was going out to buy cheaper alcohol and come back in with it.
Which is very likely. And if you saw the reaction, he was yelling and screaming, and then they saw a camera and just started talking.
I can't actually read on air what he said. It would have far too many bleeps in it.
Yes.
But, I mean, what do you make about the Devils offering to fly, you know, offering both tickets to the game?
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant move. You got to jump on anything like this. You got to beat out the LA Kings Twitter with the New Jersey Devils Twitter.
Well, the Devils Twitter tweeted at Charlie Sheen, "We'll treat you with courtesy and common sense at Charlie Sheen. Come to the game tomorrow. We have great staff and a smoking balcony."
Yeah, Charlie Sheen just got the standard LA move that he gets anywhere he goes. So I don't know why everybody's getting so excited.
You know, this is what the NHL needs, a little bit of Hollywood injected into the Stanley Cup Finals.
No, it's perfect. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's been nothing if not entertaining. The Florida Panthers have been criticized by Florida Marlins president David Sampson.
David Sampson's an idiot. I don't even know what he said, but he's an idiot. Just to preface this.
Wasn't he the guy who finished dead last in the Iron Man? That is the guy. Took him like 17 hours. It got dark in Hawaii, and he was the only guy left on the course.
That's amazing.
I didn't know that.
He's the guy who
screwed the Expos over.
Yeah.
What happened was the Florida Panthers went to the Miami Dolphins practice facility a few months ago and started handing out tickets to jaded Miami Dolphins fans.
Okay.
And David Sampson, who's the president of the Florida Marlins, thought that was inappropriate and should not have been. They should not be doing that to pit one sport in the marketplace versus another sport. Does he have any leg to stand on with his commentary?
No, none whatsoever. And I mean, it seems strange that he'd be concerned because, you know, the one Florida Marlins fan is you know, he's going to be at all the games.
Yeah,
you know,
he's not
susceptible to a hockey ticket.
They have a new stadium, and I read this week, they have a new stadium. Not read this
no,
week.
No,
they have,
sorry,
they have a new stadium.
You may not have heard me. He didn't hand it out in front of Marlins games. He handed it out in front of Dolphins.
I was just saying there was no threat to come and harass the one Miami Marlins fan.
The Marlins are, Florida's a terrible sports town, and Miami's a terrible sports town, and what you have there is a new stadium, and you know what they rank in attendance? 16th.
Well,
that's out of the new stadium.
I'm sure
in 2 years, nobody there.
I'm sure the taxpayers in Miami are very happy that they bought that.
It's amazing how much the taxpayers pay down there.
I know. It's not the greatest. But at least they have a head coach in the Miami Marlins who antagonizes the entire fan base.
What about that thing in center field they have there?
I don't mind that thing.
You like that? It's tacky. Are you tacky?
It's a tacky organization.
It is a tacky organization.
So, I mean, it sort of fits
the teal for so many years. I mean, it's
teal,
just horrendous.
I know.
Yeah.
Didn't they have it modernized and made it a little darker like San Jose did after a while and realized it's ugly?
Here are the following presenters, celebrity presenters, who are going to be presenting at the NHL Awards show.
Oh, there's an NHL Awards show?
There is. It's in Vegas every year. We still don't know why. Aaron Andrews. Granted, that's a celebrity.
What's up?
Kevin Connolly from Entourage.
Okay. Didn't he do it before?
I believe that's E from Entourage, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's watched that show for 3 years.
Colin Hanks. So they got Tom Hanks' son.
Wow.
Joshua Jackson. Well,
he's Canadian.
Yeah.
Pacey from Dawson. Or from Mighty Ducks, of course. What's his name on Mighty Ducks? Remember? Yeah. Venus will for sure know that.
Corey Monteith, who's from Glee. Don't know who that is. Matthew Perry, who I don't believe has worked since Friends. Vince Vaughn, fine.
Matthew Perry's also Canadian?
Yeah.
Ottawa.
Who's Michael Vartan? He's from two shows I've never even heard of the two shows.
What are the shows?
Hawthorne and Alias.
I believe I watch Hawthorne.
Really?
I don't know who exactly Venus, that would be.
Get in here and tell us what Joshua Jackson's name was in Mighty Ducks.
Charlie Conway.
There we go. Charlie Conway.
I put up on the monitor for you.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize. Anyways.
It wasn't Goldberg?
No, it wasn't Goldberg. Why do they even... I mean, I ask this every year. Why do they have the NHL Award Show?
Why do they have the Pro Bowl? You know, it's just one
people
of those
people watch
things.
The Pro Bowl. They still get 11 million viewers.
Let me ask you about the awards show. I mean, it's in Vegas in June. It's like 5,000 degrees outside. But they sell the package for like $500 to go down
it
there.
Costs $500 to go to the awards show.
Go to the awards show.
It makes no sense.
That's like what Patrick Kane spends on alcohol during the afternoon.
Allegedly.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something sticks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Very quickly, Richard Pollock, cheers or jeers?
I'm a quick cheer. We had a passing of my grandmother's friend this week, personal cheer. Passed away, Sam Myers is his name, 93 years old. The biggest sports fan I've ever seen, 93 years old, a couple months ago was able to talk to me about Oilers games that ended past 12 o'clock at night here, talk about the third line left wingers. It's amazing to be able to have talked to people who could compare generations from literally the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way through. I think that sometimes we forget the history and don't talk about that enough.
Well said. Gabe, do you have a cheer or jeer? We're putting you a bit on the spot.
How about a little bit of a jeer for the people who made up this story this week about Jonathan Quick being weak, high, stick side? I think all goalies are weak, high, stick side. If you can actually get the puck in the top corner, they're not going to stop it. So let's dispense with worrying about where exactly you can beat Quick and focus on actually beating him.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by wishing a congratulations to Rick Jeanneret from the Buffalo Sabres.
Yes.
He won the Foster Hewitt Award to enter into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And our very good friend Roy McGregor from the Ottawa Citizen, pardon me, the Globe and Mail. Roy McGregor is also going to go into the Hall of Fame. I'm trying to think what's the award that he got.
Elmer
Ferguson Award, thank you.
More than well deserved.
Yes.
An amazing writer.
Exactly.
You could argue he's the greatest Canadian writer, period.
Yeah, you certainly
never mind
could
sports.
You certainly could make that argument. So a big cheer to Roy McGregor. Congratulations for winning that well-deserved honor.
Overdue.
Yes.
Long overdue.
Long overdue as well, certainly. That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to my colleagues here, Richard Pollock and Gabe Desjardins, for joining us. A big thank you to our guests on today's show, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette, and Martin Cash from the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. For my colleagues on Illegal Curve Hockey, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.